Good evening, Shackley family members. This is Kathy Keating, your Vice President of Field Communications, and I'd like to welcome you all to this evening's webcast. We are very excited to have our Shackley Health Sciences team here this evening to present to you some of the latest advances in Shackley scientific research, including the preliminary unpublished results of four new studies. As many of you know, at Shackley, scientific research has been a corporate strategy for over 30 years. Our commitment to clinical and scientific research separates Shackley from the competition and has resulted in over 100 scientific papers, 90 of them published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Our research studies are designed to help advance the state of scientific knowledge in the health and nutritional sciences, and they are also a significant component of the Shackley difference. And another component of the Shackley difference McManus. Hi, Dr. Jamie. How are you?
Well, I am doing fine, Kathy, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. And hello, Shackley family. And we are here with bells on tonight, I think. We're all so excited to be here because this is, of course, one of our very favorite topics, probably actually our favorite topic in health sciences. And that is very aptly described by Kathy in the opening here as truly what we believe is one of the most important pillars of the Shackley difference. All of you out there are firm believers in our products and the health benefits that can occur as a result of that. And so we're here tonight to further that sense of confidence and credibility to help give you the latest news that supports our commitment to using natural ingredients and creating products that are based on solid science that are created with a plan to help enhance people's health and then are further validated by our research. And that's what we'll talk about tonight is our research. We can go to the next slide and talk a little bit about health sciences research objectives. So we believe that truly our commitment to science helps to support everything that you do out there and talking to people about the benefits that are achievable by virtue of changing their lifestyle, enhancing their nutrition, learning about things that they may be doing that may be negatively impacting their health. All of that is very important to us. We are as much about science, about education, as we are about science. We want to go back to the slide right before.
This one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the journals that you see there on this first slide are actually journals that we have published in. These are in our archives. If you go to Product Guide and the MD resource and other places where we really publish to all of you our scientific research, you'll see these names. But this is just so you know, these are actually real journals that actually have real scientific publication, which is again something that we don't see
that we actually
publish in. Yes, exactly. Now we can go to that next slide and talk about our research objectives. So we very much believe that, again, as both Kathy and I have said here tonight, what we do from the standpoint of the creation of the products, creation of the idea for the products, all the way to determining the formulations and following up with further validation by our internal research as well as research that you see published, is part of what we would call the scientific integrity, something that puts us apart from so many other companies, if not all the other companies out there. We hate to be dogmatic, but we do feel pretty strongly that we stand apart from all the other companies out there in our industry. We really also want to be about education. We do a lot to, as you know from many of the activities that go on around that you see at convention and in the tours and in these calls and in medical affairs and all the things that we do. We really, answering questions, talking to you all, we really want to advance the state of knowledge about health. Not just about science that's done out there, but really about science that is relevant to people's health and to help people, again, to understand what they need to do and how you can incorporate what we offer as part of enhancing that health effort that we all are very interested in. And then we also work very actively in supporting the development of our products. That's the ultimate delivery of the science, of the knowledge, of the commitment to how to incorporate nutrition and lifestyle and personal care and household products into creating a healthier life for yourself and obviously sharing that with others. We also back up what we say. Many companies out there actually put out products that aren't necessarily based in good science and may say things on their label or on their website that aren't simply aren't true. And so you can know and have complete confidence that that our team here, that everyone here is committed to that, but certainly Les Wong, who you'll hear from here shortly, is our Vice President of Health Sciences, has been here since he was born, I think, right, Les? Pamela Riggs, formerly known as Pamela Manning, who has gotten married recently, maybe you may have known that, who is our senior health scientist, senior manager in health sciences, and a registered dietitian, master's in nutrition, Cinch guru, creator of a lot of the Cinch content, Torrance Rogers, who's training people behind the scenes here at Shaklee to be able to answer questions and help you share the, you know, what we have to offer with the world. We're all very committed as a team. And Nell, not to forget Nell Prentice, I might as well give everybody their dues tonight, who coordinates everything and keeps us all sane, right? So we're all here to support and enhance what you do and to provide that additional level of credibility so that you never have any doubt as you go out and talk to people that you are representing a company with the highest level of integrity. So let's get on to our next slide here. We're going to talk about or outline what we're going to talk about tonight. We have four different studies that we're going to talk about. For those of you who were in Anaheim, there will be some new information on, I think, just about everything here tonight from what you heard, as well as at least a little bit of a deeper dive from what we were what we presented a little over a month ago or just about a month ago. So we have our vitamin D supplementation study, which is a follow-up to our landmark study. We have two different studies that are related to polyphenols and two different aspects of what they do at the cellular and organ and tissue level, as well as the fourth study being an exercise and nutritional supplementation study. So let's get on to all of the important topics at hand. So the landmark study, you know, there's new people here on the call and webcast tonight, I'm sure, that have not necessarily fully understood the landmark study. So we do want to take just a few minutes to set up what we call the landmark study and why we call it a landmark study. This is a study that was conducted in 2005, published in 2007, and this is quite an interesting and amazing study that no other company has. This is something that should make you stand quite tall in representing this company, in that we have a study that actually looked at people using our products for 20 years or more and did a number of things. We looked at their lifestyle and their dietary habits, and we also looked at their product usage. We also then measured their heights and weights and blood pressure and drew blood. And so we were able to show, which is why this is a publishable study, we were actually able to show that the consumption of multiple dietary supplements over a long period of time, 20 years or more, was actually associated with higher nutrient levels in the blood, which is not so much of a surprise, but that also was associated and correlated well with improved biomarkers, things like C-reactive protein and cholesterol levels and triglyceride levels and HDL cholesterol, so that we were able to see that higher intake of nutrients was correlated with better and healthier levels of biomarkers, and also, as on the slide you see here, also with lower prevalences of certain disease states. And so we didn't look at every disease in the world, but some of the most important ones, including what you see in the first bars that you see. And just to orient everyone, the black bars are Shaklee, are the multi-supplement users. The medium bar, the middle bar, the kind of grayish looking bar, actually I'm not looking at this in color, so.
Correct.
I'm sorry, what colors? Gray bar, okay. Are the multivitamin only user, and the clear bar, white bar, is essentially a non-supplement user. And so we were able to show that the multi-supplement user group had on average a 72% reduced prevalence of diabetes, which is one of the leading causes of death and disability and healthcare costs in today's world. So quite remarkable, as well as lower prevalence of these other diseases as well. So again, this is a study that was published in a peer-reviewed journal. You hear us throw out the term peer-reviewed journal. That means the highest level of scientific rigor. There is no higher level of scientific publication to have. So there's various tiers, and so this would be, a very high quality journal peer review. So that means that a jury of your peers essentially validates that this is a scientific study that is valued and worthy of publication, and has scientific merit and has something new to say or has something interesting or different to say than has been said in previous similar research. So this is a landmark study because we were actually able to show these kind of correlations in a population that had not really been studied before. And so we also, from this study, had a number of other interesting bits of information that came about, including the fact that our long-term Shaklee supplement users had pretty ideal levels of vitamin D. And this was as the information was unfolding in 2007, 2008, over this last 5 years or so, with public health experts being very concerned about the levels of insufficiency and even deficiency that are out there in the population of North America, U.S. and Canada in particular, so we were interested in following up on that. And so in follow-up to this study, we determined that we should look a little bit more at what's going on in the world of vitamin D, and why was it was it actually true that our Shaklee population, more widely than our landmark study population, actually were showing good, healthy levels of vitamin D? And we wanted to really dive into that a little bit more. So over the last couple of years, we've done several studies looking at that. And to help us talk about that tonight and tell you all about that, we have your Vice President of Health Sciences, Mr. Les Wong.
Thank you, Dr. Jamie. And so I'm going to talk about the next slide, the vitamin D dilemma. And before I start talking about that, interestingly enough, the finding that the 25-hydroxy vitamin D, or the blood vitamin D level in the landmark study participants, having an average of our long-term users having an average of 52.6 nanograms per ml, a very, very high, a very, very desirable, optimal type of a level of a blood vitamin D level, it sort of got us thinking. Remember, that it is just one of many, many measurements that we took in our landmark study. We looked at most of the antioxidant nutrients. We looked at a lot of minerals. We looked at a lot of important biomarkers. And this is one result that came out because we were aware of a lot of the research that began sort of in the mid-2000s that took a look at the importance of vitamin D in overall nutrition and health, beyond what we knew classically, that vitamin D is critical and involved in calcium absorption, and bone resorption and cell growth, and also some basic heart and immune health support functions. But what we saw in recent years, mainly, let's say 2007, 2008, you'll find lower risk for bone fractures and falls and periodontal disease. There were some interesting studies that correlated vitamin D intake with all-cause mortality. There were studies that linked lower vitamin D levels in the blood to higher levels of nursing home admission or higher risk for nursing home admission. There were the tie-in of a number of studies with low blood vitamin D levels to a higher risk for certain cancers, in particular colorectal cancer. And these studies were showing that those with the higher levels or the highest levels of blood vitamin D had the lowest levels and the lowest risk for all of these diseases. The last one here would be certain autoimmune diseases. And the interesting point is that about 80% of Americans probably have insufficient blood levels of vitamin D. And when we say insufficient, that's not exactly the classical inadequacy or deficiency that we typically talk about. Now, with a deficiency, you're at high risk for some serious bone health issues. But what a lot of the thought leaders and experts in vitamin D nutrition found in recent years is that those with levels of vitamin D above deficiency but lower than, say, about 30 nanograms per ml, which is the level that's determined as sufficiency, basically people with lower levels were at higher risk for many, many of some of these other health consequences. And many thought leaders have formed sort of a consensus to say that at 30 is sort of the new threshold for vitamin D health. You got to have 30 as a starting point to have sufficiency. Anything under that is insufficient, and when you're below 15 to 20, it becomes what's called, again, inadequate or deficiency. So the fact that our landmark study showed that long-term Shaklee users, supplement users, had a level of over 50, which in many organizations and scientific circles, they're thinking that's really the beginning of really the optimal range. And the next slide. So that got us thinking about what we should do, what our next study would be on vitamin D. And so the first thing we needed to do, this is our 2009 vitamin D study, in a Shaklee population. But what we did in this particular study is we also took a non-Shaklee population because we sort of wanted to get sort of a dose response measurement and to see if the benefits really associated with supplementation and higher vitamin D levels, if there were, you know, really the benefits that we had seen in correlations in the previous study. Well, this was a good study because it really did confirm our findings of the first study. And if you look at the bottom, you'll find that this study confirmed that those users taking not even 1,200 or up to, you know, say 1,000 to 1,200 international units of vitamin D daily had a blood 25-hydroxy vitamin D level of, again, about 52 nanograms per ml, which confirmed what we found in our previous study. Not only that, in this particular study, we found that when we were comparing to non-supplement users who we studied in this same 2009 study, we found that they had significantly higher HDL cholesterol levels, that greater supplemental vitamin D intake was associated with better HDL, and of course that's the good cholesterol levels, also associated with decreasing waist circumference and decreasing risk for metabolic syndrome. So again, we found some very, very interesting information that led us to then our 2010 study, which we will start to talk about in our next slide. The 2010 study is what we like to call our intervention study, and this is because this is the first time we would actually take supplementation and administer it to a non-user group and to see if we can find the benefits that we had seen in our previous observational studies. Next slide, please. And so our questions on the 2010 vitamin D study is that, do vitamin D supplements increase vitamin D and HDL levels and decrease the risk for metabolic syndrome and cardiovascular disease? And again, we're asking these questions because our 2009 study sort of suggested that these, in fact, would be the case. People with higher blood vitamin D levels showed these advantages. So we wanted to see if we could take a non-Shaklee supplementing population, a non-supplementing population, give them sort of our basic level of Shaklee supplementation and determine if, in fact, they would get the same benefit as our long-term Shaklee users. The study design is that we had overweight, non-supplement-using subjects with an increased risk for metabolic syndrome and also low HDL cholesterol. And we chose this population because we were very interested in seeing if we could move the lipid levels with just this very nominal basic level of vitamin D. We knew we'd be able to move the blood vitamin D level. And the products were basically a 50-plus multivitamin with essentially 1,200 units of vitamin D. Next slide, please. And so what we found were some impressive results. The basic results are here, and that is that supplementation with the multivitamin with vitamin D did, in fact, improve non-user vitamin D from insufficiency, which, oh, by the way, that was about 25, move people from insufficiency, which is the basic American population, averages about 25 or 26 nanograms per ml. And remember I said that really you need to be at about 30 or so to start seeing advantages, and we believe that you should be even higher than that for an optimal status. So we were able to move the needle with supplementation from insufficiency to sufficiency. That was a very solid finding, and we went ahead and presented that. And in the next slide, you will see the poster that was presented at the National Lipid Association meeting, and this was presented in the next slide. But let me go on to these results here in this slide, and that is, in addition, we had an extension of the vitamin D study where we added a two-month extension and had people consuming, in addition to just a multivitamin with vitamin D, these subjects, half of the subjects of the actual study actually consumed a daily multi-nutrient supplement to which additional omega-3 fatty acids and additional probiotics were added. And for 60 additional days, we saw some very profound trends in regard to lipid movement. And in fact, you'll see it here, the HDL cholesterol increased by 15%, the triglycerides were lowered by 14%, and the LDL cholesterol actually were lowered 3%. Now, you need to remember that this was an uncontrolled extension arm of this study, so there's no statistics associated with these, but nevertheless, the trends are interesting, and we're thinking about where we would take the next study to build off of these results. In the next slide is where you'll actually see the poster. This is the poster that was presented at the National Lipid Association in May, I believe in mid-May this year, in Chicago, National Lipid Association meeting. This is where we also presented our 2009 research on vitamin D. Was also presented at the NLA, titled being Effects of Vitamin D Supplementation on 25-hydroxyvitamin D and Markers of Cardiovascular Disease Risk in Subjects with High Waist Circumference. We have a full manuscript that is being submitted to a journal, but this is information that is in the public domain, and if it is not, it will be in our MD resource and our Health Sciences Clinicals archive. And I want to take us to the next slide, because although we had some very, very solid findings in this study, one of the more important things that we confirmed from this study was that really that there is a need for more vitamin D. Recall that we were giving supplemental vitamin D in the amount that our long-term Shaklee users had taken for many, many years. Well, for our long-term Shaklee users, we found that in two different studies, the Landmark study and our 2009 vitamin D study, that level of 1,000 to 1,200 international units was sufficient to bring 25-hydroxyvitamin D levels up above 50 nanograms per ml, really where we think you're getting towards an optimal level of vitamin D. But in our supplementation study for non-Shaklee and non-supplement users, that same level of vitamin D only took the subjects up to barely over 30. It was about 30 and a half or 31 nanograms per ml. And again, at Shaklee, we follow the science, we follow the research, and this research suggested that we needed to provide more vitamin D, particularly to populations who were at risk for low vitamin D. Well, in our population, our study population had two key risk factors for low vitamin D, and they were overweight or BMI. They had high BMI, and we also had changed the season to the point where we finished our study in the late fall, where the sunlight is not as significant as to help create for you to create vitamin D when the sunlight touches your skin. All in all, we canvassed all the literature. We determined that there are really eight key risk factors that impact the levels of vitamin D in your blood, and that of course create risk for getting insufficient or low vitamin D intakes from either low sun exposure or low dietary intakes. These risk factors are season, skin color, sun exposure and use of sunscreen or not, latitude of your principal residence, the weight or BMI, age, dietary intake, and also exercise frequency. Those who exercise more frequently tend to have a higher blood level of vitamin D. And on the next slide, you will see that we were prompted, that we were compelled to create what we call our vitamin D recommendation for identifying what your vitamin D, what your risk of low vitamin D intake is, and you actually get a personalized recommendation at the end for how much vitamin D Shapley Health Sciences is recommending that you take. So here is the opening screen to the vitamin Dology. Are you getting enough vitamin D? The next slide shows one of the eight questions that we ask to determine what your recommendation will be. In this particular case, it's choose a season, winter, spring, summer, or fall. During the summer, you will have your lowest requirement because you'll have more direct sunlight. Hopefully, you'll have more direct sunlight and more internal synthesis of vitamin D in your skin. The next slide then shows some sample personalized recommendations. Again, remember, this is an online tool. There are eight simple questions. You can finish this thing in about a minute. And the great news is you can get your personalized recommendation for your vitamin D intake based on your answers to these questions about your risk factors. Just two examples here. Someone who is light-skinned, it's summertime, a lot of sun, you live in Miami or Los Angeles, you're very fit, a low BMI, a high vitamin D intake, and you're athletic, 25 years old, you may only need 1,000 international units per day. Remember, a long-term Shapley population, for many of them in the summer, 1,000 international units was just fine. On the other hand, if you have a tendency towards higher risk factors for low vitamin D, like your dark skin, it's wintertime, you have low sun exposure, you live in Chicago, I'm not picking on Chicago, but they're a little bit north, low vitamin D,
Seattle,
high BMI,
New York, Boston.
Thank you. Your intake may be up in the 5,000 international unit per day range. And remember, these are there's a margin for error here, but we think it's a great tool to help identify what a recommended intake will be to help you have a higher or more optimal intake, which will hopefully lead to a more optimal level of blood vitamin D, which is the key that we're looking for there. So with that, I am going to turn it back over to Dr. McManus, who will tell you about another group of studies that we have.
All right. Thank you very much, Les. And our next couple of studies we're going to talk about actually are related to polyphenols. And so one of the most well-known polyphenols out there, of course, is resveratrol. Just to remind everybody, coffee and tea, or especially green tea, is another great source of polyphenols. So make sure you be drinking your green tea out there. We're all having green tea sitting around the table here. So let's talk about polyphenols a little bit again, and again specifically resveratrol. You know, over the past 10 years, there's been an emerging, you know, just plethora of studies looking at resveratrol and other polyphenols, oftentimes grape-related polyphenols. And the science is quite interesting, and the holy grail of many of these studies has been looking at potential lifespan extension. And so people want to live longer. We've been looking for the fountain of youth since Ponce de Leon in 15-something or other. My history eludes me here. Kathy, can you help me out on that? Ponce de Leon, 15.
You've got me,
Dr. I don't know. Okay. Anyway, somewhere in there. And so, of course, the understanding that resveratrol and other polyphenols can affect the aging process, that has become more known and more understood, and that there's various mechanisms at the age, at the cellular level as to how we age, which include the effects of oxidative stress related to what we eat, what we drink, air pollution, our own just internal metabolism processes can result in DNA damage and affecting many aspects of cellular function and cellular health, genetic regulators, which also can affect how the body responds to both oxidative stress and inflammation, mitochondrial function, age protein formation. These are some of the things that you've heard about before related to the kind of the aging process. So we devised some studies to look at particularly a unique blend of polyphenols and its effect on oxidative stress and inflammation. And our partners for this study were the State University of New York at Buffalo. This was what we would now call our 2010 inflammation study, looking at specifically the effects of polyphenols on oxidative and inflammatory stress after a high-fat meal. Kathy, we can go to the next slide. More specifically, this is a quite interesting study conducted by researchers in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism. They're very much interested in how food affects health. And this is a study with that was a randomized placebo-controlled trial with healthy, normal weight volunteers. And they were fed an absolutely disgusting breakfast that I'm sure no one out there would ever choose to eat, 900-calorie fast food breakfast, actually, to induce oxidative and inflammatory stress. And then basically half of these volunteers were given nothing other than this high-fat meal, and the other half were given that bad meal and this unique blend of resveratrol and polyphenols. And the next slide basically visually shows what happens, that essentially what you see when you feed someone this very high-calorie, high-fat, high-carbohydrate meal, that actually within even an hour time, there is an acute inflammatory stress. We think that that you have to eat these bad, you know, eat an unhealthy diet and follow these unhealthy, living lifestyle kind of habits for many years in order to affect our health. But in reality, that is happening in our blood and in our tissues and organs within an hour of consuming that meal. And so these reactive oxygen species, which then initiate, you know, potentially can result in DNA damage and an inflammatory response in the body, are happening within an hour's time. And 5 hours later, there's still a heightened level of inflammatory response to having consumed this bad meal. And of course, what's happened by 5 hours down the road is you may be consuming another bad meal, essentially. So it's quite remarkable, actually. So look at the next slide, and essentially what we were able to show in this study is that when you are given these unique proprietary blend of resveratrol and other polyphenols, that a significant blunting of this inflammatory and oxidative stress response was actually occurred. And for those the scientists at who want to and are interested in exactly the kind of markers we looked at, they're listed at the bottom of the page there. So the NRF2 antioxidant transcription factor, MMP9, inflammation promoting enzymes, SOX3, which is a protein mediator of insulin resistance, and GSTP1, which is a detoxifying enzyme. So we looked at not only the NRF2 factor, which we were, you know, most interested in, but also some of the, you know, precursors and upstream and downstream markers related to kind of confirm what we're seeing is a real phenomenon. Next slide, Kathy, actually shows, just to let everybody know out there, why are we looking at that? Well, clearly, you know, as I said a few slides back, we're interested in how the body ages, but also not only do we age as a result of inflammation and oxidative stress, but we have all these variety of health effects that can occur. Insulin resistance can occur, which leads ultimately to diabetes. Insulin resistance leads to how you metabolize glucose. Obesity itself is actually an inflammatory disease. If you are obese, you're actually putting out these inflammatory cytokines that actually promote inflammatory stress, the accumulation of toxins in the body, how the liver functions, how the body responds to metabolism. Inflammation leads to damage in your arterial walls that can lead to the accumulation of cholesterol and other plaque buildup that can ultimately lead to heart disease and to stroke. Inflammation in the joints can destroy your cartilage and lead to significant arthritis and other significant diseases. So this is quite a remarkable study that we'll talk a little bit more about the follow-up related to that. The second study we want to talk about related to polyphenols is our mitochondrial study. Now, as I said a few slides back, the gradual decline in mitochondria, mitochondrial number and mitochondrial function is actually one of the mechanisms by which we age. It's also one of the mechanisms by which certain disease processes occur. And some of the interest in this came from a study that was published in Nature in 2006. which looked at resveratrol, as we said earlier, also extending lifespan. And one of the mechanisms by this, as we go to the next slide, actually looked at mitochondria. And, of course, this was looking at mitochondrial effects in animals. It showed that resveratrol actually increases the mitochondrial mass, so meaning the number of mitochondria that you have, as well as the function of them, so that when you have higher numbers of mitochondria, you actually have can support cellular energy production, but also can potentially support longevity in these animal studies that have been done. So we, of course, at Shackley, wanted to look at a human study, and we partnered with Dr. Michael Zemel, who is a professor of nutrition at the University of Tennessee. There's probably some Tennessee folks out there on the call and webcast tonight. And he helped us performed the study. We helped fund the study, which was a laboratory study looking at human muscle cells and the effect of polyphenols on mitochondria. So the next slide will actually show you a very enlarged picture of a mitochondria, because you have millions of these in your body. So this is not true to size here, but this is actually the little organelle, which you have a gazillion of them, which is quite a scientific term, in your cells and tissues and organs that essentially turn nutrients into energy, into ATP, which is the energy unit that powers the function of all the cells in your body. So what we wanted to do was to measure mitochondrial mass and cellular energy production with and without treatment with this unique blend of resveratrol and polyphenols. So the next slide, which I think shows just the one at a time, will come up. Let's see here how that...
There we go. Build.
There we go, Bill. There we go. Okay, so build that first picture. So this is looking at this polyphenol blend and its effect on mitochondria. So the first slide there shows your control. So these are human muscle cells, with the green being the mitochondria. So that's your baseline. The next slide is actually showing human muscle cells treated with just resveratrol. So you see definitely the effects, which is why some of the research studies, including the one published in Nature a few years back, was able to show in animals. Now we're showing in humans, actually, that that resveratrol does have an effect on mitochondrial mass. This specifically is looking at the number of mitochondria in these muscle cells. And then, of course, we wanted to look at our unique polyphenol resveratrol blend, which is the final slide coming up, showing obviously a huge and significant, this is where we should have the pounding on the table and the bells and whistles, right? But we won't, because we're scientists here. Showing actually this very significant increase in the amount of green that you see here, which is actually showing an increase in mitochondrial mass and the number of mitochondria in these human muscle cells. So quite remarkable, quite interesting. The next slide actually shows us a graph looking at oxygen consumption. So the oxygen consumption of your cells is actually measuring how much energy has been produced to power the cells in action. So what looks like, so you look at the top slide, top line on the graph is the control, and then resveratrol is the next line down, and then the significantly lower line, which means an increase in oxygen consumption, and therefore is a measure of energy production at the cellular level, was significantly enhanced in the resveratrol and polyphenol blend. So you have a pictorial depiction as well as a graph. So you have the mass. We're showing you, the previous slide shows you the mass of mitochondria, the number of mitochondria, and then this slide is actually showing the function of the mitochondria. So this is a very interesting and very exciting research that we know that you can really take to people out there to talk about the effects of mitochondria, and of course to be able to show an improvement and an increase in cellular energy is quite remarkable. So to summarize that, the next slide, we have significant research now supporting many aspects of of functional benefit from consumption of resveratrol and polyphenols together, in particular the unique proprietary blend of resveratrol and polyphenols, including the reduction of inflammation, especially inflammation post unhealthy meal. Imagine what can happen possibly when you're eating a more healthy food, actually, and the tremendous benefits from that. So we also have a study showing the increase in cellular energy production as well as mitochondrial mass. Again, this is in a human muscle cell. We also have the reduction of age proteins, which we aren't talking about specifically tonight, but age protein formation, these age proteins are glycated end products that occur. It's kind of debris that builds up in the cells as a result of kind of unhealthy lifestyle, unhealthy eating habits. So we've shown the combination of resveratrol and polyphenols to be actually more effective than resveratrol alone at decreasing the formation of these age proteins. And then, of course, we also have the reduction of oxidative stress by virtue of the first study that we talked about tonight. So quite remarkable, actually, that we are able to show not only that this unique resveratrol and polyphenol blend has these various benefits that we've outlined here, but also that we also show that there's an enhanced benefit of that compared to resveratrol alone, since there's a lot of resveratrol products out there. It's nice to know that there's research to support actually the specific blend compared to resveratrol alone. So tremendously exciting news, and we're not done. We actually have one more very, very intriguing study and actually a setup to that study to talk about, and no one better equipped to share that study with us and all the information about it than our Senior Health Sciences Manager, Pamela Riggs.
Thanks, Dr. Jamie. I have the pleasure of sharing with you the results of another really exciting study that we've been involved in, and we're calling it our 2010 Exercise and Supplement Study. Generally, the study was designed to evaluate the effectiveness of exercise plus supplementation on body composition, several different fitness parameters, and bone density. Next slide, please. But before I talk about the details of the newest study, I want to recap a little bit of the first study that we did in collaboration with Dr. Wayne Westcott at Quincy College in Quincy, Massachusetts. And Dr. Westcott's been a great partner on these studies with us, and he is an exercise science instructor at Quincy College. He's also the author of a number of fitness books. He's a certified personal trainer and strength conditioning specialist, and overall really great guy. And if any of you were in Anaheim and attended our healthcare professionals reception, he was one of our guest speakers, and he actually talked a little bit about this study that I'm going to be talking about. But going back to our first study with him in 2008, just to recap real quickly, in that study, we had about 46 middle-aged men and women complete a six-month supervised exercise program. And they did exercise, 2 to 3 times a week. Their routine included a combination of strength training, aerobic exercise, and stretching. And half the group drank a high-protein meal replacement beverage immediately after their workouts, and the other half didn't. And they did this over, a six-month period, coming into exercise 2 to 3 times a week. And body composition measures were taken at several points during the study. And if you go on to the next slide, you can see by the graph here kind of a summary of the results at the six-month time period. And what we found was the study participants who drank that meal replacement beverage immediately after their workouts actually increased their lean body mass by almost 6 pounds, 5.5 pounds, and they decreased their fat weight by about 9 pounds. So they had an overall improvement in body composition by about 14.5 pounds. Now, the group that didn't have the supplementation increased their lean body mass to some degree, about 3.9 pounds, and decreased their fat weight by 4.4 pounds. So they did have some improvement, but significantly less than we saw in the supplemented group. So to kind of put it in perspective, the supplement group increased their lean body mass probably 2 pounds more and lost 4 pounds of more body fat than the group that didn't supplement. And these results were actually published in the May 2008 issue of Fitness Management Magazine. Now, if you go on to the next slide, that sets us up for our follow-up study. So based on the results of the first study, we wanted to do a follow-up study where we took it one step further by looking at the effects of exercise plus supplementation in a group of older sedentary adults for a duration of 9 months, so extended the period of time that the study, original study, was done. And these subjects actually were divided into three groups. So we had a placebo group that kind of served as a control. So they didn't exercise, they didn't do the supplementation, but we wanted to have that control group there. And then we had the group that exercised again 2 to 3 times a week, followed a similar exercise regimen based on the American College of Sports Medicine guidelines, including the standard strength training, endurance, and stretching exercises. And we had the third group who did that same exercise routine but also took that meal replacement beverage. And they actually started consuming their shakes during their activity and then, or their exercise regimen, and then finished it as, you know, they were finishing their routine. And again, like the first study, the exercise regimen was a combination of strength training, aerobic exercise, and stretching. So what we found, too, is that the group that did the supplementation, what they did is they took that high-protein meal replacement shake during and after their exercise regimen, the 2 to 3 times a week, and they took a multivitamin mineral supplement containing up to 1,200 international units of vitamin D. Go on to the next slide. Where am I here? And what we did is we looked at several measurements. So they were looking at body composition, a number of fitness parameters, heart rate, blood pressure, as well as bone mineral density measured by dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, or DEXA. And the next slide is just a couple pictures of our study participants. As you can see, you know, older individuals, both men and women, doing their exercise routine. And if you go on to the next slide, you can see them in the facility, you know, drinking their protein shakes. And then I'll share with you a little bit of our preliminary test results. Now, further analysis on the data is still pending. However, some of the results we can share with you tonight are that the group who did take the supplements and exercised increased their lean body mass by 22% more than the group who just exercised. And so that's, you know, really good to know that, you know, with exercise, you know, and we saw that in the first study, you can increase your lean body mass, you know, burn fat, but added with their supplement program, they actually saw a 22% increase above those that just exercised. There was also some preliminary results on modest effects on systolic blood pressure with the 5% decrease in the exercise plus supplementation group compared to those who just exercised. Next slide, please. And in terms of the changes in spine mineral, bone mineral density, what we found, again, these are really preliminary results, that the group who did the exercise and took the multivitamin mineral supplement saw a 1% increase in spine lumbar spine bone mineral density, while the exercise group saw no change. Now, how does this kind of relate to you? Well, we know from the body of literature on bone mineral density that the average adult loses, you know, at least 1% of their bone mineral density after each year, after age 30, and for menopausal women, that is accelerated during those first few years after menopause. So I think the results of this study are really interesting and remarkable, because the takeaway message is, you know, you can do nothing, and chances are you're just going to continue to lose your bone mineral density every year. Or, you know, you can choose to exercise, and these folks only did it, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, and they were able at this point, it looks like, to maintain their bone density. However, the best course of action appears to be actually a combination of exercise plus that multivitamin mineral supplementation, so that the trend is looking really positive.
And protein.
I forgot to put that in. The meal replacement and the multivitamin mineral supplementation. So it gives you some great options to really improve your bone health, your lean muscle mass, really two very important factors as we age, to promote quality of life and flexibility and mobility as we get older. So I'm going to hand it back to Dr. Jamie to start wrapping things up.
All right. Thank you so much, Pam. And I think we can go to the next slide, which is, where are we going with all this great research? Well, here's what you want to know. The vitamin D study that Les talked about tonight has been submitted for publication. So you may very well get an update from us sometime here in the near future about where it's been published and when you actually can access that. The inflammation study has also been submitted for publication, and again, we're very, very much expecting the researchers there are very well published and very successful at getting their studies published. So we definitely expect good news about that coming along. The mitochondria study, we actually are continuing to do some testing there. Again, similar to our partners at the State University of New York at Buffalo, when university researchers become familiar with the effects of nutritional ingredients and nutritional supplementation, they're actually somewhat surprised at times and want to continue to do further studies. So we are again in a situation where our research partner is very interested in our results, and so we are continuing to analyze the data and also looking to possibly do some additional studies that would result in a publication. Our goal there with the mitochondria study was more to really, do kind of a preliminary study there showing the results that have been shown in animals in humans, but because the results are so significant, we may actually end up with a publication there as well. And then, of course, with the exercise and supplement study, we are still analyzing the bone mineral density results as well as some of the other details which Pam alluded to, but we also feel that that has a great possibility of being another publication. So, again, adding to our inventory and our ability to showcase the quality and level of scientific rigor that we pursue here at Shackley. So if we can go to the next slide, we want to put that into action for you, and we want to continue to be able to we want to continue to be able to give you the information that you need to educate people about how to incorporate what we learn from a scientific standpoint into how you can put that into action with nutritional supplementation and education about healthy lifestyle. So there's a couple of resources that I do want to tell you about. One is our MD resource. Now, our MD resource is a website that we put together for medical professionals, healthcare professionals of all sorts, but there's an initial part of that anybody can access. In fact, about 75% of that site anybody can access. So you can go to that at physicians.shackley.com. And in that initial part of where you just open that up, you'll come to archives of articles. There's also some selective calls that have been archived there. So there's a wealth of information to access there. You also can, if you sign on as a healthcare professional, access the password protected part of that site that actually allows you to access all of our clinical studies. And we're just in the process of, just in case people are wondering about that, of updating that, and we have actually a project underway that you'll all see the results of here, hopefully in the coming weeks to months, in being able to see some new additions and updates to just about every aspect of that site. So we finally are going to be able to get that underway. So we're quite excited about that. So there's a wealth of information there now, but you'll also be able to access, including this whole archived area, which is all very new, all the latest articles that have been written by Health Sciences, letters from me that are on various topics, et cetera. We also want to tell you about another site that you can access some of our more recent studies that aren't necessarily on the MD website quite yet, but will be shortly. And that site is at www.clinicals.shackley.com. I know that Kathy highlights these things in Power of Shackley. There you go, clinicals.shackley.com. Excellent, right there for all of you on the screen. I also wanted to tell you about something that many of you may not know about, and your Vice President of Health Sciences, Les Wong, is tireless in his support of a Health Sciences Facebook fan page. And you should also know about that because that is where you can hear about read about some of the latest science that out there that's not from Shackley but just from out in the world. That are studies that are very interesting and very relevant for you to know about for your own personal information, as well as to educate people about why certain supplements may be very helpful for them in enhancing their health. So this is not a Shackley site. You will look for a tulips photo, and that will alert you that you are in the right place in that Health Sciences Facebook fan page. So with that, I think we're going to open it up for questions. I have a few things that I will announce after you give them the instructions on how to join us for,
sure.
And I know that you've been amassing some questions
yes.
as we've come along here.
Yes. You know, there are two ways to submit a question during this time. One is to do what many of you have already been doing, which is to use the actual webcast console. You'll see that there's a little window there. You can enter a question and submit it to the team. We have the entire health sciences team here. We will endeavor to answer all of your questions live through the audio so everyone can hear the answer to the question, especially those that pertain to, you know, a larger group. If it's an individual question, we'll try to get your answer individually. But if you're on the phone with us, if you happen to be just listening on your telephone line, you can press 1 on your touch-tone phone. Press 1 only one time. If you press it twice, you'll be taken out of the queue. And I do want to answer a quick question, if
sure,
I may,
absolutely.
That is coming in quite a bit. I know there's a lot of curiosity about whether or not those of us who have joined us on the webcast can have a copy of these slides. Can they? Will they be able to see this webcast again? And unfortunately, I have to let everyone know the answer is no, not at this time. I think we're a privileged group to be given a preview to the unpublished findings of these studies, and in some cases they are preliminary. And that is why we cannot provide you with any kind of a written documentation. We will ask you very seriously not to try to take any of these slides as a screenshot or any other way that you might try to take them and reuse them, because that might harm our chances of publication. So that's why the answer has to be no in this instance. It's not often no. We don't like to say no. We like to say yes.
We love to say yes.
Yeah. But that's the answer to that question. And then, Dr. Jamie, you had some other things that you wanted to
but
say.
But they are all so much more educated now, Kathy, as a result
that's
of
true.
This.
That's true.
With a much
true.
Higher level of confidence that you than you had an hour ago at the
and
start
I will
of this
say
call.
That we can, I believe, mm-hmm. archive the audio portion only of this call.
Yes.
We
yes,
can
absolutely.
Place the audio portion only, and that will be in the usual place where we archive our health sciences conference calls, which, as you all know, probably take place on a monthly basis the second Wednesday of every month. So mark your calendar for that. These
mark
are
your calendar.
Keep on coming.
And also, you know, we would suggest that you download that that audio archive onto your MP3 and, you know, make your disc of that to put in your car and listen to, because this is, again, an ongoing great way to remind yourself and re-educate yourself invigorate your excitement about sharing Shackley and everything that we offer for people. So I just wanted to say a few things before we open it up for questions. Just a few reminders. We are actively out on the road right now, your health sciences team. We're very committed to spending time with all of you, and we have a number of events coming up that are part of the Dream Tour, as well as other events that are happening that are showcasing Shackley events or other events, Jim Burke's event, the Bolting House event, the Cranny Harvest Festival. There's a whole variety of them that you can access on the site, and Kathy, you can tell me that site where they can go?
Yes, it's called events.shackley.com.
There you go.
Or they can simply log into myshackley.com and look in the upcoming events section of that homepage.
Excellent. So please go to find where, not only where events are coming close to you, but also where events are in other places where you may have people that you want to send to hear about Shackley. Roger and I are going to be out on the road with Sean Gray and others who are going to be joining us in four cities. We're going to be in L.A. this Saturday, in Denver on Monday, Chicago Tuesday, and New York on Wednesday. But we also, all of us, Les, Pam, and I, as well as Dr. Alexia Smith, are going to be out on the road. I actually think Dr. Carson Smith is going to join us for a couple of them as well. So you're going to have scientists at cities across the United States on these weeknight, and including Friday night, Dream Tour events, as well as the other events, which are largely more likely to be weekend events. But then again, if you go to those sites, you'll find out those dates and times and locations. And, you know, these events are not just for you to come and learn more. They are really oriented towards helping you have a place to introduce anyone you care about to hear more about Shackley. So we really do encourage you to bring as many new people as possible to all these events, because we really have so much to share. We have not only the new dream plan to talk about, but everything that supports it being successful, and that is our incredible products that are backed by great science that allow you to go out and with great confidence introduce Shackley products to people and truly know that you're going to be able to change people's lives by virtue of improved health as well as the opportunity for a better lifestyle. So with that, I think we're going to open it up to questions, Kathy.